Okay, well, welcome everybody. This is our first conference call of our last of the season adapt learning events. I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call from the traditional territory of the Kwanlundun First Nation and Tawn Kwashin Council. Stephanie, I see your note that you can't hear anything and that you're working on it. So I'm not sure you can also, let me just pop Stephanie a note. All in. Okay. What I do is I use my phone. You guys can probably see me twice on the screen if you can see that. I use my phone to phone in and then I connect just to view with the computer because I do have bad internet. Peter, since you're quick on the computer, can you maybe pop the phone number and code in the chat for Stephanie? Thanks. Okay, so Recording and Recreation, or BF-103, builds on our other BF, not best friend, but anyways, Budgets and Finances learning events. So we BF-101 in the core learning events was about basic recreation finances, and then you guys did the proposal writing, which was a big one, and then report writing follows up on some of those ones. So what we do is in Reporting and Recreation, we're going to introduce common practices for telling the story of your projects, programs, or services. So reporting is different to evaluation, but it still begins with good planning. It targets different audiences and it serves different purposes. So reports can share facts, demonstrate accountability, and make recommendations for the future. If you're in the slides, slide 4 shows you that in BF-103, we're going to recognize that we prepare reports for different purposes and different audiences. We are going to identify the common elements that form a report, and then we're going to understand some of the ways that we can collect and organize information for a report. And I can imagine that all of you on this call have done a number of reports over your careers. I've had people in those situations in this learning event before, and they always find something that they can take away from it to improve their reporting or to make their reporting easier or more user-friendly or things like that. So I trust that you will find something that's helpful to you in your role through this learning event. So keep in mind this is an advanced learning event, but it's only 2 weeks. So we've got this conference call in next week, and then there's 2 required learning activities, and then you have 2 extra weeks to complete. So basically, you need to wrap up all of your required learning activities by the end of May. In June, I start resetting things for September. So you've got, if you sort of put that broadly in your mind, you've got till the end of May to finish up. So before we get too far into the call, let's do a quick round of introductions. We have 4 people on the call, so I think you guys are getting to know each other well, but I've got a fairly hefty question to start off with. So I'll pop it in the chat, and I'll give you a moment to think about it. Deanne, if you'd rather just listen, if you have anything you want to put in the chat, you can, but this is a big question. So we'll start with Isabel, then we'll go to Peter, and then if Stephanie's audio is working, we'll go to Stephanie. So the question is, I think we know your name. You can tell us your community again. And maybe share a little bit about what types of reports have you prepared? What was the purpose of those reports? Who was the audience? What was the presentation format? So that's a few questions, but feel free to focus in on whichever ones work best for you. I just want to get a general sense of where everyone's at as far as your reporting, and it's interesting to compare when you hear each other's experiences. Okay, so over to you, Isabel.
It is a big question indeed. I do a lot of reporting in my work. I would say that most of the report that I have to do are reporting to funders. Like they award us a grant or some funding, and then we need to report back every quarterly or at the end, okay, this is how we are doing, and according to the objective or the work plan that we had, this is how we're doing so far, or at the end, they want often to have some narrative, but also a financial report. So both together, that gives the big picture of how successful or not successful that project was. I've also done some reporting with other organizations where we work more closely on caseloads and on follow-up with some specific participants. So it's a very different kind of report where we work on different individual and personalized objectives and goals that we all work towards. Yeah, quite familiar with reporting.
That's interesting and very, I think what you just shared shows that there are very different ways or types of reports, and it's important to understand that because if we only think of reporting in one way, we can't often structure it for the purpose or for the audience. So thanks, Isabel. Over to you, Peter. What types of reports have you prepared? What was the purpose? Who was the audience? And yes, you can talk about school reports too.
Well, I've done not a tremendous amount of work reports, but I just did one for that we report. I report basically to Caroline, and then she reports to our funders. Yeah, like compiling, as some of you might know, like a Real Leader program, compiling all the data from those programs and in a way that's appealing, and then sending it off to say, hey, look, this is what we did with all that money. In school, I feel like I like doing it because in school it's similar. Like with academic writing, you just sort of make claims and then you have to like back up those claims with sort of data and like science behind it. And you can't just say whatever you want. So very similar. It's just like, oh, I did this, or like this is this because of these things. Well, I don't know, I really know how to say it more clearly than that.
That's a really good answer. Isabel's got both thumbs up. And maybe you're thinking the same thing as me, that a report has to have some evidence behind it. Because I don't know about you guys, but I've seen some reporting sometime that I'm like, tell me where you came up with that. Like, I really can't visualize it. So it needs to be have some sort of context and some sort of evidence to actually be a report. So thanks, Peter. That's a good thing to point in or point out. Stephanie, how about you? I'm pretty sure you've done some reports in your time too. So what types of reports have you prepared? What was the purpose? Who was the audience? How did you present them?
Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Well, I do a monthly report to mayor and council just to let them know what is going on at the community hall, like for events and stuff that's coming up and has happened in the past. And I'm also in the process of just finishing up a report for our community 5-year strategic wellness plan. So I'm just working on that with two other coordinators from two other communities who are kind of helping me with it and getting more ideas and stuff too, right? So I'm working on that. And I'm also applying for funding for helmets and stuff for like our bike program and stuff too. So I'm kind of working on a bunch of stuff. So, but different audiences.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. So when you put that together with what Isabel and Peter said, you can see how reports can happen as frequently as once a month, right? Or, you know, as Isabel said, quarterly, or as Peter said, annually, or as you just showed, also over 5 years. So really interesting to see the range of the types of reports and also depending on who you're preparing them for. So Peter prepared some reporting for me that then I turned around and gave to the funders. The way he prepared it for me was different to the way it appeared to the funders. So you have to think about who you're targeting that report for. And a community wellness report would be very different than the case reports that Isabel mentioned or a monthly report for mayor and council. So thanks for sharing that, Stephanie. Julianne, I think, did you just join the call?
Yes, I did.
Okay, well, welcome. What we're doing is we're digging into reporting, and we are in the chat that's on the computer link, not in the other chat. So I'll just tell you what the question was. If you want to pass the first round, you're more than welcome to. But it was, you know, we were looking for a bit of experience with reporting, what types of reports you've prepared, the purpose of the report, who was the audience, or what was the presentation format. So if you feel like jumping in and sharing a little bit about your experience with the reporting, that would be great. And if not, we're, because you just joined us, it's okay to pass too.
So have reports that I have done in the past? Or how?
Yeah, what types of reports have you prepared? Who for? What was the purpose?
I've been working lately with the report to the SEO. Report for the grant that we get or funding at the end of a program or an activity. Sometimes report to council.
Great, thanks. Yeah, so a little similar to some of them. Some of that were different that were pointed out, Isabel mentioned, like a case report, so an individual one. And Peter mentioned a report that goes to somebody who then puts it into a bigger report. So, and Stephanie talked about reporting on a 5-year community wellness plan. So we're just, you can see from those examples. Deanne, I know you were just planning on listening. Did you want to jump in on that question or just continue listening?
I can share that my experience. So I do reporting for basically for the Lottery Yukon, and we do have some sponsors here for Squash Yukon. So yeah, I just report to them at the end of the, once we get the finance, like the funding from them.
That's great, thanks. So, you know, as you can see from what everybody's shared, we all have a lot of experience with reporting. I've prepared everything to those little short reports to really long reports for funders to the, I think probably the funnest thing that I've done most recently that I would also consider a form of report is the film that the Recreation and Parks Association just had produced for them by Midnight Light, The Recreation Effect. That in a sense is a report back to our funders. I don't know. For those of you who may have seen it or not, I'm going to share it at the end. If anyone's interested, I'll share the link out. But that is also a type of report because it tells the story of what RPA's been doing for programs in communities. And so that was really super fun way of sharing information. So if you take a look at slide 7, if you happen to have the slides open in front of you, slide 7 points out all the different types of audiences that we might deal with. So you've mentioned funders, organizations, councils, partners, a supervisor. You might have to report to your board if you, like Isabel, I don't know if you do reports. Okay, I see your head nodding there, Boys and Girls Club board or whoever that is. So yeah, absolutely. There's lots of different audiences and even to the community. So I've done, sometimes we do strategic planning and we do a what we've heard report that just shares back to check in on perceptions and things. So lots of different ways. And as you can see on slide 8, you can prepare reports using more than writing. And Peter, I really appreciate the audio RLAs that you've been sharing in the different learning events because it's different. It gives me something to sit there. I'm not always reading and writing. I get to listen and just even your voice, I can imagine and visualize things a bit more than just reading, writing. So were you going to jump in and say something?
Yeah, I actually would recommend it to people because you just like write down a few points into Microsoft Word and like think about the question. And then you just do like a 3-4 minute video. And it's honestly easier than typing it out sometimes. Like you just kind of talk and you get like a better answer and it's easier, I think, but I don't know.
Sometimes yeah, and it sounds more like a story.
Yeah.
Oh, did you see Isabel's comment? You said a radio voice, so there you go.
Yeah.
You go to radio.
Yeah.
But no, it's also a really engaging for other people because we all get tired of reading writing sometimes, right? And you know, I think we need to be really creative in how we share information because the more creative we are, the more it catches people's attention. So, you know, consider things like not just a written document or a financial report, but photos, videos, infographics, or even an oral presentation as well. There is, Peter, you could try it, but I don't know if everybody would be able to download it. You can do a video of yourself talking too, the same as the audio, but the audio is better for Rec North because you can definitely have a look and, you know, people can download it passwords later. So when you think of the word report, you know, there's lots of things that maybe come to mind. So perhaps you think of something that takes a lot of work to do. I just finished reporting for April 30th and I probably had 100 pages and it was just regurgitating information. It's a little tedious. Or perhaps you think of something that's formally written with an introduction and methodology and things like that. Or maybe you think of something that gets filed on somebody's desk and never looked at again. That's another way we sometimes think of reports. Put your hand up or let me know. How many of you wonder if anybody ever reads the reports that you write? Yeah. You too, Stephanie? Okay, good. And Peter's nodding his head as well. Definitely. So that's why on slide 8 we just really talk about being creative. So if reports are presented visually or orally, I think that that's also more appealing in the North. I know our funders, some of our funders with the Public Health Agency of Canada, they really appreciate presentation reports because I don't think they have time to read the other reports either. So slide 9 is a good slide to look at because what it shows you is that there are different ways or there's different types of reports. So you can see that the reports are suited to the purpose. So hopefully you've got that open. If not, I'll explain a little bit. So most likely you'll do things like a project report, which means you're accountable to a funder, or a financial report showing how you spent money, or a program report that explains something that you did with your program. But there's also things like facilities reports. So probably, you know, Stephanie, in your role as recreation, at some point in time you might have to do a facilities report that talks about what you have as far as recreation infrastructure. And that can be quite a lot of work. You might have to do annual reports or evaluation reports as well. Regardless of what you're reporting, so let's sort of set aside what we have to report, but let's think that there's three main areas that you want to report on. So if you have slide 10 open, I tried to simplify this when I created this learning event. I'm like, how simple can I make this? So I got it down to three things. So a report should share the story, the numbers, and the results. So one exception to results might be a report where you actually make recommendations about what should happen. So a facilities report might tell the story of the state of facilities in your community, but it might also include numbers such as how much the facilities get or how many repairs or upgrades are needed. And then instead of results, you'd recommend the changes or what would change if those recommendations were acted upon. So slightly different if you're making a report more to get something to happen, which would be a facilities one. So let's pause for a moment and talk about these three key areas in a bit more detail. And so what I'm going to ask you to do, and we started with Isabel last time, so Peter, I'm going to put you on the hot spot and start with you this time, just so Isabel's not on the hot seat all the call. So what I'd like you to do is share an example, and I know you've got an example, of when you reported on a story, numbers, or results. It could be one of those three things. What were the successes and challenges you reported, or what types of numbers or results did you present? So Peter, then Stephanie, Juliana, Deanne, and Isabel.
Well, most recently, just doing the Real Leader reports, getting all like the numbers in was really a challenge, just because you have so many people that you have to interact with. Yeah, I just found it a little tricky too, just because even I was just learning how to use our sort of master tracker and delegate funds into appropriate columns based on the funding source, and it's a little confusing because sometimes you'll hear someone say one thing and someone will also say something else. And then you're like,
yeah, like you hear a like a story of a program where somebody said, I have 36 participants, and the next time I have 176 participation counts, right? Like, what is that?
Yeah, and like, even though, I mean, obviously people can get confused by sort of the questions and stuff, and then, but just like clarifying it all, especially when you have so many of them, it's like, oh, do I bother with this, or do I go after them about the specific question? Like, I guess I have to, but like, it can be a lot.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's that evidence part, right? Like you mentioned it when you're talking about academic reports, is you have to be reasonably accurate in the story, but the numbers, if it's financial numbers, you got to be pretty darn accurate, right? Because you don't want your funders to come back and not fund you next time because you weren't accurate or get in trouble with if there's an audit or anything like that. So with some, you have to be more precise, but you know, if a program started on September 10th or September 20th, it probably really doesn't matter if that program ran for 3 months, right? So there's some things that you can convey more as a story and some that come across better as numbers. Thanks.
I was looking over, you prepared this sort of like health promotion unit report, and I was looking over the one that you prepared, and I saw that you said NA for a couple of them that you didn't have the data for. And I was like, oh, that's not too bad. Because like, you still get the picture of everything, but it was just like, a couple little points that you didn't have it in time for the report. But
yeah, and I think it's better to say it's not available than to make it up.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because then you get caught. when you do get a report and it's different than what you had said it was.
Yeah. So, okay, thanks, Peter. Stephanie, how about yourself? Do you have an example that comes to mind of when you reported on either the story numbers or results? What was it that you reported, or what types of numbers or results did you present?
I would say when I do my monthly reports, they always want to know participation and approximate cost of, like, let's say, the after-school activity programs that I have, like Monday to Friday. They want to know how many kids had attended. And not just that, but the events and activities, extracurricular, like let's say I just had two chess tournaments in the last two Saturdays. So they would like to know who showed up, or not who, but how many showed up for the tournaments, how much I spent on the prizes and wages. So they kind of want to have. And not only that, they always like to have like a picture, or kind of like they want to see smiley faces and stuff, right? So they, this is to counsel, and they want to have a feel of what I'm doing for the community, with the community, and they just want to make sure I'm doing my job, pretty much.
Yes, it's your accountability, but it's also sharing what's working. So, you know, if you share the numbers, we had 10 people participate, and then the next week we had 20 people participate. That tells part of the story, but also, like you said, a photo with somebody, you know, yay, or with, you know, a quote from somebody. I usually use quotes because they're easier to collect than pictures. So, and that tells the story. So I think that's a really good example of. And the results are, you know, how much did you spend and stuff like that. Like we had three chess tournaments and we had five after school programs and stuff like that. Those would be the outputs, right? And you can't, it's hard to report on the outcomes on a monthly basis, but over the whole year, maybe at the end of the year, you say, so here's what changed over the last 12 reports. So
yeah,
that's great. Thanks. Juliana, how about yourself? Do you have an example that you can share of reporting on stuff that includes the story, the numbers, or the results, and how you reported that?
I think maybe I could point it out as when doing reports, I think maybe because of my background, usually to work on more qualitative than quantitative results. Sometimes, if we, especially live in a small community, a number of 12 people could something like it's small, but when we're talking about I don't know, for the population of 1,600 people, 12 would be like the percentage would look higher. So maybe for, especially when it's funding for government or other agencies that they are not too familiar with the region, when the number could seem really low, I tend to use percentage.
Yeah, that's a good point. Isabel's nodding her head too. So, you know, there's definitely ways to maintain your integrity of reporting accurately, but present numbers differently. So, you know, you can say last year we had this many and this year we had this many, or in your story you can say, well, the challenges were that the weather was really cold that day, so we're still happy that we had 10 people show up, or there's different ways, I think, of putting it. Or if you put it in a target group, like maybe the 12 aren't among the whole community, but they're among youth age 13 to 15 or something like that. So there's lots of ways to structure or shift what you're presenting so that it really sounds positive without being positive for something that's actually not positive. Like if you think 12 is a bad number, then maybe there's a reason for it, right? So maybe you can explain the challenges. Like over the last 2 years, I've been reporting lots on, you know, we only had this many people, but it was COVID, right? And really, that's a great number for when there's been public health restrictions and people were afraid to go out in public and things. So if you can present, you know, either the successes or challenges around it, then you get a better picture.
Yeah, exactly. And this was one of the reports, and somebody was comparing, and it was for sure a different season. It changed completely when people, they're going to be more engaged in something outdoors in July than something in February that they're asking me. I said, oh, but last year was a great success. Like, yeah, it was summer. Even myself, I would go to the thing, but on February, I'm not sure. So it's great to see how.
Yeah, or like
a different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, and just to put those things out there, like on our last conference call for the core, the Thursday conference calls, Nathan explained how the caribou come through Baker Lake, like it's never predictable when the caribou are there. I think at the Yukon it's much more predictable, but he said it can be almost any time there, fall and spring migrations, and they can be close to the community or far away. So if you're planning something and all of a sudden an unexpected event like the caribou show up and they're closer to the community than you expected, that can affect participation. And reporting to that on somebody from down south, they're not going to necessarily understand that dynamic as well. So,
and there's reports that one day that it was an activity that was planned, but it was what people in the community would think that it was too hot. It was 20 degrees, and that, for example, for the past 3 years, we didn't have that weather, and then we had like 20 degrees and 22. People, they just didn't want to leave home because it was too hot for them. But then I was talking to somebody like, oh, it was like amazing opportunity for people to get out. I'm like, no, for them it was too hot. But then sometimes it's interesting.
That's great. Yeah. So thanks for sharing that. I really appreciate you saying, you know, I think what you're saying is we really have to position what we're reporting on in our own community context and in what's going on. So thanks, Juliana. Deanne, did you want to jump in? As far as when you reported on the story numbers or results, go ahead then.
So I do report to the board members about the squash program or about the squash tournaments. So whenever I do reporting, I do mention about like number of the participants, how much money we make it out of it, or what are the expenses. So how much we make it, so how much will be the entry fee, and how many sponsors we are having, and the expenditure, like how much we will spend on the prizes, how much we will spend on the food, and how much we will spend on the logistics and all. And we at the end, I do report about like the winners and runners, and I do like send the results to the press and all this. Yeah, that kind of report.
That's great. So you have different audiences that you have to report to and structure it in different ways.
Yeah.
Thanks. And Isabel, how about yourself? Like, you shared two very different examples of reports that you do. Do you have an example of when you reported on the story numbers or results and what it was?
We do quarterly reports from our numbers where we report on contact hours. So it's the amount of time that a participant has been engaged in our programming that we multiply by the time, by the amount of participants that are present in the program. So that is the contact hours of how we report. We also keep very close tab on the amount of snacks and meals that we provide, because we work closely also with the food network, the food bank. Those are very important numbers for the territory. So we gather these numbers as well. But yeah, we collect, of course, our attendance, the amount of participants, the family, the contact hours, the meals, and we do statistics like increase, decrease in attendance. We track the trend. I really like what you said about how you present your number using percentage over, and numbers, because, and we also keep our mind thinking that we are still in COVID recovery. We are still trying to gain the trust back of the people, get them re-engaged fully in our program. So, it's a constant increase. If you look at the peak of where your program was pre-COVID, I think it's easier and it's kinder on the heart to just to look at it that way too. So for ourselves, it's good to be mindful of how we gather our numbers.
And then do you combine, like, that's quite quantitative or those are numbers and things. So do you combine that with some of the results, like some of the outcomes that you noticed? Do you find that people are more likely to participate when there's healthy food, or people are more engaged when there's healthy food, or do you notice other changes that you report on, or is that longer term?
It is longer term for sure. But it is like a forward point in all of our program. The food is there, but it's more, we gather the type of activities. What is the interest of our population? What they want to do, we really track on this because we know what works. So they ask for it, so we want to keep track of that.
That's great. Thanks. So that's a little bit more about the story, what you're hearing from people and things too. So, and I think that that's an important piece, because sometimes when you report to funders, especially if it's a funder that is funding you multiple years, they want to know what's working, not only from your perspective, but from your community's perspective. So, if all of a sudden they realize that what you're doing isn't working, or the community's saying it's not working, they'd probably rethink their funding. So, good point. Thank you.
It's also part of the culture of how BGC works in the world. And we're really trying hard to have governments and big entity understand that we can't tell young people this is what you need. It's them telling us this is what we want and this is what we want to see happen. So we're trying kind of to shift that. So reporting that way helps a lot too.
Yeah, that's great. I would say that the mindset has shifted. Like, in the 30 years that I've been doing this, they used to just want numbers, and now the qualitative or the stories or the experiences are more acceptable. And I think those stories are what are actually more relevant to us in the North. We have small communities. People learn from each other through stories, and people like to hear successes. And actually, that's one of the reasons why we have these conference calls as part of our learning events, because you all learn from each other from hearing these things. So thanks. So thank you, everyone. That was a good bit of conversation about, how you report and how you bring in the story, the numbers, and the results. I'd like to take a couple of minutes to talk about how you actually collect information for your reports, because I think we all do that a little differently. So we started with Peter last time. So Stephanie, I'm going to put you on the hot seat this time, but let me put the question in the chat first so you can think about it. So we'll go Stephanie, Juliana, Deanne, Isabel, and Peter. Maybe you could just tell us, how do you collect information for the report that you're doing? So what do you think, Stephanie?
Sorry. Well, how I like to collect information is, first of all, usually before an event, I'm thinking of the Jamboree, for instance, with my volunteers and my staff, and I shouldn't say my staff, like our team, we do a briefing of who's going to do what, what's going on, and it's just afterwards, usually when after everything is over, we all get together, have a coffee, have a lunch or something, and all of us put in our input, like let's say, hey, you know what, the parking over there didn't really work out that great, so maybe next year we'll move or we'll change the barriers to a different spot, or we had an incident that came up, maybe this section can be monitored, we could have two staff or one staff, one volunteer. So it's usually afterwards, but like with my group, I like to get together, and that's one of the main ways I collect information. And it's just not only afterwards the debrief, but during, I like to take observations and notes during the event. So that's how I do it.
So then does somebody actually write those down, and do those recommendations end up in your reports?
Usually myself, like afterwards, when I debrief with my group, I get together with the SAO and whoever else is working, like with Public Works, and we all get together. We make like an oral / written report to our SAO, and he helps us put a formal report together. And then at that point, we find ways to rectify any kind of issues or problems that we can physically do at that point. And then we make note of in the future, hey, you know what, in our budgeting, maybe we have, if some, there's a structure that is like, nobody noticed that it was falling apart, okay, that is something that could be put into capital budgeting for next year, that could be repaired before the Jamboree next year, kind of thing. So we all look for ways to find solutions for any kind of issues or problems that had arose during the event, before the event, and after.
Great. So that's just an example then of how for reporting, it's, you don't want it, that report just to sit on the shelf. You want to report on things that are useful and that you can act on again in the future. So
yeah.
Thanks, Stephanie. Juliana, how about for yourself? How do you collect information that goes in your reports?
Well, I do have usually some surveys or some form for information or some like documents to keep on, but especially when I'm dealing with the multiple projects and programs at the same time and different people working on, I try to always ask them to take pictures and send me a quick note, or sometimes I stop by and I already try to talk to people or to people the attendants to the or those delivering the activities to take notes later. But pictures, they are always helping with it.
Yeah, picture documentation is a great idea because you can also write a little bit below the picture, you know, put it in a file, right? So that's always really helpful. Thanks for sharing that. That's great. Deanne, how about yourself? How do you collect information for reports?
So the first thing what we do for registration is the one way to collect the info, and then like how many participants are going to come to a tournament. So I use Google Docs or SurveyMonkey to collect the registration form. Once we have those numbers, then we from the docs we convert the data to Excel sheet, and on the Excel sheet itself we take all the like how much money and all this, like, you're having or like we even extended. So the whole reporting is done on the Excel sheet basically, and all the data is collected on the Excel sheet, and from there we I do report it.
Yeah, that's great. SurveyMonkey is great when you like to use Excel. So I love that too. I love that I can set up the SurveyMonkey in many different ways and then export it all and then work with it from there. So thanks for sharing that. Isabel, how about yourself? How do you collect information for the reports you prepare?
We do have an in-house tool that we develop. It's tracking the attendance, the activities, and the time. So when we have a young person, they arrive at this time, they engage in this activities, and then they leave at this time. So we track that differently, as well as obviously the amount of snacks that we served, what was the recipe, and again, where the meals. So those are different things that we track.
So for your youth programs, then when somebody comes in, you write their name down, the time they came, what they participated in, and what time they left? How do you do that if you have a lot of people participating? Sorry, I'm just curious, because that sounds amazing. It just feels like, do you miss people ever, or?
Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Of course, we have many staff that are on the floor that are present there, but it's also a habit that their participants have, and they sign in and sign out. They help us tracking all of this.
That's great. Yeah, because Peter needs to set up some tracking for his Real Leader programs for September. So, Peter, that you might be able to find out how Isabel does it. So that would be great.
A clipboard that you make publicly open for everybody, staff and participants know that they can access this. Sign your name, what time it is, put a clock close by so they don't have to find someone with a watch or whatever to know what time it is. It's right there in their face. And it's like, you have the staff that backtrack just to make sure. But if you drill that habit with your participant, as soon as you're walking, you write your name down, what time it is, it's really helpful. Their age, too.
That's great. Thanks. And you don't have any problems with privacy with doing that, then? Awesome. Thank you. Peter, how about yourself? How do you collect information for reports?
I really like that idea, just having a link that people can report on, because it's hard to really get engaged with participants. Anyway, we use SurveyMonkey, and I mean, I like SurveyMonkey. It seems to be pretty effective. Going forward, I've only done this stuff for like 7 months, 8 months, and I feel like in the future when I get to do SurveyMonkey stuff, I will centralize all the data onto an Excel spreadsheet, because I find that I'm like looking through like different, like I'm on Dropbox and I'm in like my emails and I'm also on SurveyMonkey and I'm on the reporting tool, all trying to find the same information, and I've just been going back and forth over and over again. And the one thing about SurveyMonkey is you have to go through pages and pages and pages, which is kind of a little annoying. I know you can filter out, but it's, sometimes you don't know exactly how to find it. I don't know. So it's that'll be a good tool to do next year, just to have it all in one spot.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to download. We just have to maybe check your account that you've got that capability. So
yeah,
that would be the thing. Great. Thanks, Peter. Well, thanks, everybody. As you mentioned, there are different ways to collect information for reporting, and if you have any creative ways, like I love the idea of photos, feedback forms. Sometimes people put little drop boxes with message cards or debriefs, as Stephanie mentioned. There's lots of different ways. I think the key with collecting information, though, is you have to do it right there and then. So Isabel said when they walk in the door and when they walk out, and Stephanie said like right after the event. If you wait for a month, 2 months, 3 months, and you don't have the pictures, as Juliana suggested, it's really easy to sort of forget what happened and makes it really hard to put a report together. So try and do things sort of as they happen if you can. So In some of the other learning events, you've looked at ways to collect information, like we did RF 102, Get to Know Your Community. I don't think Isabel and Deanne have done that yet, but everybody else has. And we also definitely looked at information gathering in RP 102, Evaluation and Recreation. So flipping on through the slides, if you look at slide 15, slide 15 introduces the collecting information for reporting. And as you guys have said, you can use things like registration forms. Deanne mentioned that. Check in with participants for feedback, taking photos, asking people to share their opinions, and also tracking finances properly as part of collecting information for reporting. Slide 16 lists some of the documents that you might actually use. So attendance records, Isabel mentioned that. Registration forms, progress charts. So, you know, if you're working in, say, sport or Peter probably with fitness, you know, you might have a progress chart to show how things changed. Stephanie, you mentioned like incidents or things that go wrong. So sometimes having an incident form, which when you take RM 102, which is document to manage risk, you'll see what we're talking about with that. So there's lots of different things that you can use. Does anyone have any other tools or documents that you use besides the ones that are shown on slide 15 and 16? If so, just speak up. That sort of captures it then? Okay, that's great. So if you look at slides 17 through 20, because they're also included in week one, these go into more details about tools that you can use to collect information specifically from your participants. So you can use tools that ask for written or verbal feedback, like Juliana mentioned. And you always want to design those tools to make sure that they're simple to read and also fun to answer. So I sometimes use symbols like the thumb up, the thumb in the middle, or the thumb down. I like that one. Or happy faces you've seen, or stars, things like that. So what you're asked to do, or I guess slide 18 too, talks about open and closed questions. If all your questions are closed, you're not going to get some of that richer information, but closed questions are also faster and easier to report on. So try and blend the questions that you use if you're using collecting information from people. So you can see sort of some examples on slide 19 of pros and cons of closed questions, as compared to slide 20, which shows open-ended questions. So for this week's required learning activity, there's quite a difference between this week and next week. It's not one that leads into the other. This week, what I'd like you to do is you're going to design, no, that's correct. Okay, sorry, I was just looking at the slide in my notes and I thought I had two different things there, but I don't. I just have more in the slides than I do in my notes. So in this week, you're going to design a simple tool, and you can also pull one out that you already use and revise it, like take a look at it and you can share it and say, this is what I did use, and I'm going to make these changes to it based on our conversation about reporting. So design or pull out a simple tool that you could use to collect information for either a project or program that you already work on or one that's imaginary. It's totally up to you. And make sure that the tool collects information from people and collects information that you actually would put into a report. So, you know, if you're reporting on physical activity and you ask, what did you eat for breakfast? That's not quite relevant, right? But if you're reporting on healthy eating behaviors, then what did you eat for breakfast is. So what I'd like you to do is, if you look at slide 21 or the Activity 3 forum, I'd like you to make sure that you have at least a few questions. So three closed and three open-ended questions if you want to. And you can try formatting the tool either in a Word document, or you could use Google Forms, which is another similar to SurveyMonkey or SurveyMonkey or something like that. So that's your required learning activity for the week. Does anyone have any questions about that? I think there's quite a lot of information there. Okay, so your tool can be written or oral, and it can be used to collect information during, like Isabel's attendance and activity forms, or at the end of a project. So if, you know, you can take something that you already use and you can expand it so that you've got some open and closed questions if you want. You can revise something you already use, or you can completely make up something. And there is a link to in Activity 3 to one that Teresa, who's from Yellowknife, did, just to give you an example that this doesn't have to be complicated. I'm not looking for something that's super long or hard. Great. So let's just go around and see if anybody has any questions. Juliana, any questions, comments, final things about collecting information?
No, sir. I'm just looking to hit the early, trying to understand exactly what we need to do.
Yeah, and I realized when I read my notes and read the slide that it might be a little bit long-worded. So you're going
to do kind of a surveyor feedback, participant feedback for one of the programs, just to develop one.
Yes. And again, it can be one that you already use, but see if it meets the criteria, which is to have some open and some closed-ended questions.
Okay.
And if you want to create it in an online tool, all you have to do is share the link with me. So if you want to try, if you've never tried Google Forms, useful to try, just so that you know that there's different ways of doing things. So, or you can write it out and say, here's the questions that I would ask, or here's the form. As I mentioned, if you go into Activity 3, there's Teresa's reporting tool as an example, and hers is one page long. So she has three open questions and three closed ones, and that's really, it's pretty, hers is fairly straightforward, but I like it because it's simple, and I can imagine filling this out if I was a participant.
Okay.
And just feel free to message me if you have any more questions. My apologies if it wasn't as clear as I was thinking it might be. So, Gian, any questions or final comments?
I think I'm good. Thank you, Carmen.
Awesome. And Isabel? You're all good. I see that A-OK sign. Okay. Peter, any questions or comments? Nope. And Stephanie? Awesome. Well, thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining today's call. I really appreciate it. We only have one more call left before summer. It doesn't feel like summer today, though. It's kind of cold again out there. But hopefully it's a little bit warmer wherever you are. Hopefully spring comes soon. So if anybody has any other individual questions, feel free to stay on the line after I stop the call recording. And I look forward to reading your required learning activities and chatting with you next week. Thank you. Merci, Cho. Merci. Bon achiche. Have a great afternoon.